Hi, I'm John Mooney and welcome to The Dark State. Just a short note to say that if you're hearing this, you will only hear a section of today's conversation. We don't run ads on the show and rely solely on the support of our subscribers. If you are interested in the security threats facing Ireland and the modern world, please do consider subscribing. In order to access the full episode, you will need to subscribe on Patreon or Apple Podcasts. Regardless of whether you do subscribe or not, I do hope you enjoy this show. What are the unforeseen impacts of the Kremlin's decision to conscript young men to fight in Ukraine? Will it ensure the war will drag on indefinitely? Will it result in nuclear weapons being used for the first time since World War II? And what are the implications for Europe and indeed Ireland? I'm John Mooney and welcome to The Dark State. I am joined by Professor Neil Robinson from Limerick University, who's a recognised expert on Russian affairs. He's also been a very good friend to this podcast. Neil, welcome back to the show. Could I begin by asking you for your thoughts on the mobilisation?
Well, I think the mobilisation was unexpected in many ways because of the problems that it was going to cause. So the fact that they went for what they're calling a partial mobilization shouldn't have been as unexpected as it was, but the definition of the mobilization, the way it's being done, and the response of the Russian public, especially, you know, sort of young men of fighting age, has, I think, taken a lot of us by surprise.
And do you think this is, like, what are the Kremlin's interpretation of this? Do you think, I know there's been a lot of protests across Russia, there have been attacks on conscription officers and violent scenes in states like Dagestan. What is the Kremlin's view of this, or does it even care?
I don't really think that they kind of thought it through properly in that sense, that they weren't expecting the reaction that they've had. Partly that's because, you know, sort of there were obviously a lot of demonstrations when the war first broke out, but those demonstrations have receded. The population has been bombarded with propaganda through the main sort of media, through the main TV stations in particular. So I think they possibly thought that, you know, sort of there would be less of a reaction. But it was always going to be a mess. And I think that, you know, sort of that's the thing that they sort of made the biggest mistake over, that they hadn't quite sort of grasped that this wasn't something that could be easily implemented. And their concerns, I think, were much more simple, were much more to do with the military situation in Ukraine and providing, you know, sort of really an army of occupation, not so much a sort of a fighting force, but simply being able to, you know, sort of garrison every Ukrainian settlement that's been taken, sort of possibly control some of the anti-Russian action that's been taken behind the front lines, and just build up enough of an army of occupation that they couldn't be so easily swept aside as they were in Kharkiv province a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, sort of they were thinking very simply about, you know, sort of some immediate problems and not really sort of thinking through all of the implications. But that really is kind of par for the course with the entire war, isn't it? You know, sort of they've reacted to, you know, sort of only one dimension of the problems that they think are before them, and, you know, sort of haven't really taken account of popular mood in Ukraine in the first instance and now in Russia, haven't thought through, you know, sort of how they're going to get local authorities and local draft offices to implement the mobilization. You know, and so they've come unstuck, and it's beginning to backfire on them.
This is an incredibly difficult situation to understand in many ways, but I hear some commentators talking about this could be the end for Putin and his regime, that they've miscalculated this, etc., etc. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, is there any potential for any sort of uprising in Russia to, you know, demand fresh elections or indeed topple the powers that be there?
It's very hard to see how that will happen. There have been protests. I mean, this morning, obviously, a military officer in charge of a draft enrollment center was shot, and the last news I saw, he was still fighting for his life. But you know, sort of, there are, you know, sort of violent actions taking place. But they're sporadic in many ways, you know. Sort of, they're not concentrated, and they're not involving enough people in Moscow and St. Petersburg. Now, if you began to get, you know, sort of something of a much more generalized wave of protest, and if you began to get, in particular, you know, sort of demonstrators who won't go home in Moscow or St. Petersburg, then, you know, sort of things could begin to balloon. The problem is then, you know, sort of what kind of political demands do they make, and who reacts to those political demands, and who can react to those political demands? It's very hard to see, you know, sort of the army reacting to those demands. It's very hard to see any of the other parts of the security apparatus reacting to those demands and forcing a change of some kind. So, you know, sort of where does protest go, even if it spreads and gets bigger? You know, sort of you would probably need some of the sort of political parties that are still in the Duma to come out and to sort of support the actions of the people. Now, there may be one or two deputies who would be willing to do that, but, you know, sort of it's very hard to see, you know, sort of the Communist Party of the Russian Federation, for example, doing that. And even if, you know, sort of somebody did pick up the baton of popular protest, it's hard to see what difference that's going to make in terms of the war, because sort of Russian elites in general have been fairly belligerent over foreign policy over the last decade or so, and have shared much of the sort of Putin vision, if you will. It's going to be hard for them to readjust and to sort of end the war without, you know, sort of provoking parts of the military and parts of the sort of the far right into a situation of revolt and calling, you know, sort of their actions a stab in the back, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's very hard to see who's going to take up the sort of baton of protest and turn it into meaningful political change.
And I assume that if, I suppose, members of the Russian Duma were to come out publicly and criticize what is happening and what is unfolding, they themselves would be targeted. I mean, Russia has a very long-standing tradition of targeting dissenters within Russia itself, in terms of people have lost their lives for being taken very opposing positions to the Kremlin. Is that correct, or is that an overstatement?
Yes, that has happened. It's sort of how easily it could happen to somebody in the Duma. You may remember a couple of weeks ago, I mean, it sort of made it onto a lot of Western social media. I think it also figured in, you know, sort of one or two newspaper reports, and the video was attached to those. There was a deputy from Just Russia, Spravedlivaya Russia, who was on one of the main talk shows and who was critical of the war, even called it a colonial war, and, you know, sort of pointed out that really there was no need for this, no exit strategy, you know, sort of no real prospect of bringing it to a halt. But those voices have been very isolated and, you know, sort of have not sort of translated into into some sort of serious opposition movement inside the Duma itself. So it's going to be hard to see that happening. I mean, I suppose one of the things you might need to look for in the next little while is if there is actually a little bit more reaction from within the Federation Council. That is the sort of the upper house of the Russian Parliament. And the Federation Council is made up of sort of senators, effectively two from each of the main administrative units of Russia. One from the executive branch of the regional or Republican government, and one from the legislature. And they are people who are sort of in Moscow to represent the interests of local elites. And these are the people who, sort of are obviously going to be charged with managing mobilization. And it's going to be interesting to see if some of them, you know, sort of begin to complain or sort of point out that the system is not being very well managed because of the difficulties that they're having fulfilling their targets, or the protests that they find on the streets. We've already seen that in Dagestan. There was some grumbling from Ramzan Kadyrov, the president of Chechnya, about the draft. It's possible that some of those regional authorities, and from them to the Federation Council, that some of them begin to sort of express displeasure. That might modify the nature of the draft, but it's probably not going to end the war or bring about regime change.
Okay, so returning to the issue of the war itself, has this mobilization the potential to drag this out indefinitely? I mean, will the Russian public tolerate seeing its young men sent to die in a war that it might not win and possibly won't? Is there potential for this just to become a frozen conflict that will go on and on and on?
Yeah, I think the potential for it becoming a frozen conflict is, you know, sort of increased by the draft rather than lessened, unfortunately. The military effectiveness of these draftees is obviously going to be open to question, and I'm sure people have seen some of the social media videos that have been passed around of some of the equipment that supposedly these troops are being issued with, sort of rusty old AK-47s, uniforms that are not fit for purpose. They've also, many of them, been given instructions about what they should buy, including your own body armor, your own rations, and one list I saw even said, you might think about bringing a drone with you. They're not going to be sort of changing the conflict in and of themselves, but they might, affect some other changes. First of all, they might release some soldiers who are on garrison duty in other parts of Russia who might be more militarily effective. It's hard to see how they will be particularly more militarily effective than the troops that are already there, but it might increase the effectiveness of Russian troops a little bit. But it might also, the other thing is, it might help Putin domestically, in that if the army's numbers are boosted by these conscripts, then they can sort of be used, or other soldiers can be used, to garrison Ukraine. And that will free up from Ukraine people from the National Guard, Rosgvardia, and troops from the Ministry of Internal Affairs, paramilitary policemen, effectively. And they're the people who, provide the backbone of the regime in dealing with the protests, and are also probably the people who are going to have to manage the draft. So, bringing some of those people home, getting them out of the conflict zone, and they've been they've been terribly ineffective. I mean, it's many of those troops were the sort of, you know, those paramilitary policemen were the sort of casualties of the early days of the war. They were some of the garrison troops which were pushed aside by the Ukrainians in Kharkiv over the last few weeks. You know, so, you know, sort of they're not really doing any good militarily in Ukraine. But, you know, sort of when it comes to bashing the heads of demonstrators and rounding people up for conscription, then they'll be much more effective and, you know, sort of tied to the regime as well. Because let's not forget, you know, sort of the draft is also going to be a period of personal enrichment for many of the officials who oversee it, because, you know, sort of the opportunity to take bribes, etc., from people who don't want to be drafted and who have the money to be able to buy themselves out is always going to be there in a country with systemic corruption like Russia has. So there are going to be some changes because of the draft, but, you know, sort of how quickly they take place and how effective they are militarily is one thing, but, you know, sort of there are going to be domestic effects as well.
Neil, what are the implications for European security if this occurs?
Well, I mean, that really depends on the outcome of the war as a whole, doesn't it? You know, sort of, and other things as well. I mean, you know, sort of, we're sitting here, you know, sort of, still watching the Italian election results roll in, and, you know, sort of, all of the people who are likely to be making up the Italian government, according to the results, whether they can actually sort of construct coalitions and maintain a coalition for very long, is another question. They're all people who have historically been friendly towards Putin's Russia. So, you know, sort of the draft may be less important than what's going on in Europe more generally. You know, sort of when he was in a coalition before, Savini sort of, you know, blocked some of the sort of European Union's measures to sanction Russia. So, you know, sort of Berlusconi last week, who may also, you know, sort of have some role in the new Italian government, excused Putin's invasion of Ukraine and blamed Ukraine and the West generally for forcing Putin's hand. So those things are potentially going to have more of an effect on European security and the united front that Europe has sort of cobbled together on Ukraine than the draft will and the conduct of the war, you know, sort of. So it's hard to see that the draft itself having a major effect on Europe's security, you know, sort of when those other things are going on and are likely to be much more important.
I see. It's a very complex situation. I'm really interested in your views on how the relationship between Ireland and Russia is changing as a result of this. Ireland has been steadfast in its opposition to the invasion of Ukraine. There have been lots of other issues and upsets between Russia and Ireland in recent years also. Has the relationship between Dublin and Moscow changed, in your view?
Yeah, it has. I mean, but, you know, sort of it's changed as a result of Ireland going along with Europe and the United States. So, you know, kind of all of the governments that have been vociferous about, you know, sort of opposing Russia's actions in Ukraine, you know, sort of we'll see their relationships worsening. You know, sort of the only states that have managed to sort of, I suppose, maintain something of a friendly relationship with Russia are Hungary and, to a degree, Turkey. You know, sort of everybody else has sort of cooled to Russia or been, you know, sort of more critical in Europe, and Ireland has been part and parcel of that. So, you know, sort of I think that means that we're going to have bad relations with Russia for some time to come. You know, sort of the you know, sort of Ireland's reception of Ukrainians, Ireland's moral support for Ukraine rather than particularly its military support, obviously, because we don't have the defence infrastructure to provide vast amounts of equipment, etc., in the same way that, say, the Americans or the British or even the Germans and the Italians have done. So, you know, sort of we're going to have poor diplomatic relationships with Russia for quite some time to come, but so is everybody in that sense. Mm. And, you know, kind of there's no going back. I mean, if you sort of look at some of the sort of second level, if you like, Russian commentary on things like economic sanctions, political and diplomatic relations. So this is not stuff that's coming out from Sergei Lavrov or coming out from Putin, but from people who sort of might, you know, kind of reflect a broader social reaction to the way that relationships between the West and Russia are developing. None of them are expecting, you know, sort of the quick restoration of political or economic ties with the West. So, you know, sort of our relations have disimproved and are likely to stay in a poor situation for quite some time. You know, sort of if you look, for example, at, you know, kind of what business leaders are saying, you know, sort of where sanctions have hit them in some way or other, they're not expecting, you know, sort of Western companies to come back. They're not expecting to have restored relationships, you know, sort of in tech sectors, for example. Over the coming years, things are going to continue to be bad, according to those people, you know, sort of, and their expectation is that, you know, sort of, there will be, even if the war was to end tomorrow, you know, sanctions won't, and so the economic effects and the way that that skews diplomatic relationships, those things are going to continue for quite some time.
In order to access the full episode, you will need to subscribe on Patreon or Apple Podcasts. Regardless of whether you subscribe or not, I do hope you enjoyed this show. And don't forget, if you wish to contact me, please email thedarkstatepodcast@protonmail.com, or you can message me on Signal, Telegram or WhatsApp at +353 89 975 3779. Until next time, do take care.